Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 4, Detour. So when I trained, everyone had to do a year in some other specialty. It was quite common to choose something a bit related. So some people chose sexual health, some people chose urology or neonates, and some were a little bit broader, so chose A&E or general surgery to improve their surgical skills or general medicine to improve their medical skills. And we all gained new skills and we all brought them back in to our workplaces when we return to our specialty. So I chose neonates, care of newborn babies. And really in this job, I had three main roles. So the first role was attending deliveries to resuscitate babies. So some babies at birth need a little bit of help. It's a massive change when a baby's born and it takes its first breath. And in fact, the whole circulation within the baby needs to switch over very quickly compared with what it was doing previously. Sometimes a baby needs a bit of help to do this. So we have a special machine called a resuscitaire, and basically it warms the baby. It has oxygen and air and the equipment to be able to help the baby breathe while it's working out how to do it for itself. So for some births, a paediatrician is called to be there just in case the baby needs this resuscitation, this additional help. So I found myself on the other side of the delivery room, so not helping with the birth, but standing by the resuscitaire, the machine, waiting to receive a baby, which may or may not need help to start breathing. And sometimes in obstetrics, we can be a little bit amiss. So we can refer to the paediatricians as the paed. We don't necessarily bother to know their name. And I discovered how that felt to be the nameless paed that was just called and sent to attend a birth and have this responsibility of potentially resuscitating a newborn baby. Things have got a little bit better now in the present day, and a lot of us in maternity are trained to do this bedside resuscitation. So all of us obstetricians and midwives do an annual update on newborn life support, newborn resuscitation, in case we're needed to help out at a birth. So although we do still call our paediatricians and neonatal nurses and very much need their expertise, we are there on hand to do the first bits if need be. So that was a key component of my job. The second main component of my job was looking after the babies in the neonatal unit. So about 7% of babies are what we call preterm. So that is they're born before 37 weeks. And some of these are relatively well. Certainly babies born at 34 weeks onwards usually have very little that they need assistance with. But extremely preterm babies, which make up 5% of those 7% preterm birth, so a very small number, are extremely preterm. So that is born before 28 weeks. And these babies may need intensive care for a long time. In fact, when a preterm baby is born, The paediatricians often say to parents that they may not be able to take their baby home until actually the time that their original due date was, because they potentially have quite a long and complicated time in hospital growing and developing. So I found looking after the preterm babies on the neonatal unit rather difficult. It felt more like veterinary medicine than obstetrics did, because I was unable to communicate with my patients. So the babies could be very small. They could be as small as 750 grams. That is 3 pats of butter or possibly a bag of sugar. So they were very, very small, and I didn't get that much contact with their parents as a very junior doctor. But what I did have to do was the sort of regular practical tasks on the unit, and this included doing the phlebotomy round. So that is taking blood, minute blood samples, which went in these tiny, tiny bottles that were literally a few drops of blood that we had to squeeze out to do the tests that we needed to look after this baby. And it was very difficult, and the veins were not much bigger than the tiny needles we were using to try and take these blood tests, and it was very difficult. The other aspect of this work was it really brought home to me the tremendously long stay that a preterm baby can have and the complications that it can encounter. So babies born preterm can sometimes end up with chronic illnesses. And so although about 90% of babies beyond 28 weeks survive, they can have breathing problems, cerebral palsy, and other complications, hearing problems, visual problems, which make life more difficult for them. So I really started to understand the context of some of the work that I was doing. The routine baby checks on the postnatal ward actually were the bit that I found most difficult. We were taught how to do a baby check, and it was very tedious. It was mundane. Families were desperate to go home. It was very repetitive, but there was a massive weight of responsibility knowing that I was the only doctor doing a baby check. And we routinely checked baby's heart, baby's pulses, hips for dislocation of the hip, reflexes such as the suck, and check the baby's palate, fingers, toes, spine. All seemingly quite straightforward. But I was pretty terrified that I was going to miss something. You know, we'd had fairly short training. And one day I did miss something. So we had a baby that wasn't feeding brilliantly, was a bit lethargic, didn't really know what was wrong with it. I can't remember. I think I discussed it with the registrar, but I don't think he ever went to look at the baby. And I was pretty devastated the next day when I turned up for work to find that baby in the neonatal intensive care, because overnight it had been discovered that the baby had a heart abnormality. And fortunately, the baby did okay and was transferred for the surgery it needed. But I felt horrendously guilty that I'd missed that. I think our junior doctors get a lot more support now. And I know that examination of the newborn, the baby checks that I was doing, are often now done by midwives that have been upskilled by doing a quite significant training course under supervision, rather than a doctor that's literally been told how to do it once or twice and then expected to get on with it. It's also easier to pick up heart abnormalities because most maternity units in the UK and neonatal units now have a little probe that you can attach to the baby that measures the baby's oxygen levels. So it's harder. It's not impossible, but it's harder to miss things now than it was. So my neonatal 6 months was pretty much 3 months struggling to get to grips with things, feeling pretty scared. And then 3 months feeling a little bit more comfortable in the routine, and then time to leave. So for my second placement, I chose paediatric surgery. And the reason for this was I'd become interested in fetal medicine during my first year on the job. And fetal medicine is the expertise of diagnosing fetal anomalies on ultrasound scan. Some conditions where the baby develops abnormally need corrective surgery as soon as the baby's born or shortly after, and I wanted to understand a bit more about that treatment. So I got a job for 6 months in a tertiary paediatric surgery department where I learned a bit about surgery. So some of the conditions we looked after were bowel conditions where the bowel is outside the tummy wall, such as gastroschisis and exomphalos. We also looked after babies that had congenital diaphragmatic hernia. That is where the diaphragm between the lungs and the abdomen, between the chest and the abdomen, hasn't properly formed. And also surgery for tracheoesophageal fissure, where the breathing tube and the swallowing tube are joined together. Some of our tiny patients needed just one-off treatment. Some of them needed much longer-term treatment, so a series of operations with an impact on their life longer-term. And this really was one of the points where I realised that a decision we make can be very profound and can have a long-lasting impact on the life of a family. And that sounds obvious, but I think when you're a young doctor, you don't necessarily realise the impact of that. I had some children as patients who'd spent their entire lives in hospital, as well as several children who were inpatients in the hospital for the entirety of my 6 month post. One day I was walking along the corridor in the hospital and I heard my name called. And I turned around to discover a woman who I'd looked after in my first obstetric job when she had a very preterm baby. She was really pleased to see me and was chatting away about her child and telling me all the ins and outs of the last few years and the fact that it had involved many hospital stays and visits. And as I listened to her talk, it really sunk in with me that impact, the full implication of how much her life had changed. And that's probably true of all first-time parents, of which she was one. But for this woman, much more radically so. So in obstetrics, we often deliver a baby, we pass a baby straight on, almost within seconds, almost without even glancing at what sex the baby is, straight to our paediatric colleagues through necessity. But we don't often see the long-term outcome. So meeting this woman several years after the event was a really big learning point for me. Surgery on such tiny babies and children was painstaking, with us gathered around this tiny form on a normal adult-size operating table. The surgeons wore little magnifying glasses on their glasses, and the surgical instruments were tiny, seemingly like toys, you know, dainty little doll-like things. And the sutures, the stitches, were very fine, very thin. So stitches come in various thicknesses and they have a scale. And in obstetrics, we use usually number one or zero for cesareans, and perhaps something called 2-0, which is a bit thinner, for something more delicate like vaginal stitching. In paediatric surgery, we were pretty much only using 6-0, so incredibly fine in comparison. And normal swabs were also too big for our patients. They seemed sized for giants. Instead, we used tiny pledgelets, which are little round dots of swab held on an instrument and used to carefully dab the operating field. So when I returned to operating in obstetrics and gynaecology, operating felt really crude in comparison. and even a small blood loss felt excessive, and the sutures felt almost like operating with pieces of string or rope. It was very, very different to the finesse of paediatric surgery. I was the only doctor in the department that wasn't a general surgical trainee. So I was estranged to them, a bit of an anomaly, as their world was to me. So I offered to run a teaching session on the antenatal diagnosis and management of the problems we were treating. Bearing in mind, all these problems are quite rare, maybe one baby in 10,000 or one baby in 20,000 will have some of these conditions. So the babies they were seeing week in, week out would be something that we might see in obstetric unit once in a year or once in several years. So they needed to understand the rarity of the condition in the general population, as well as the difference in prognosis that there might be when you're discussing a baby that's already got as far as a tertiary centre and is ready for surgery in comparison with making a diagnosis in a delivery room or at an ultrasound scan much earlier on in pregnancy. A baby that reaches a tertiary unit and is ready for surgery is already a survivor. It's already overcome significant challenges just to be there in the first place. I also had to explain to them that some conditions can be readily diagnosed by ultrasound, but that actually some conditions aren't and can be very difficult to diagnose, and that therefore parents that they were receiving were sometimes in a complete state of shock, having only just learnt that their baby had a problem, in comparison with some families that had perhaps half the pregnancy to get to grips with what's happened. Some of the abnormalities we were seeing, such as exomphalos, can be diagnosed even at 12 weeks, giving a family a long time to come to terms with what treatment that baby may need and what that means for them as a family. The really lovely thing now is that because surgery for some of these conditions has improved massively, and these babies survive a lot better than they used to, I'm now seeing women come through my antenatal clinic who had surgery as babies, perhaps 20 or 30 years ago, for things such as congenital diaphragmatic hernia, which they may not have survived in previous years. And I'm now looking after them in pregnancy, knowing and understanding what they and their families went through when they were born, and understanding their condition and looking after them in the next stage of their lives, which is having their own babies themselves. So that's pretty special. It was very interesting for me that 6 months. I learned an enormous amount, but I also like to think that I taught the department around me a little bit too, and gave something back. So now we get to today's zesty bit, the bit where I suggest something that you might want to take away from today's episode. And today's zesty bit is that seeing something from another viewpoint can be very valuable. So breadth of experiences and perspectives are important. I was very lucky. I had to go and spend a year in other specialties. It's a little bit harder to do now for some of our trainees, but they still can do what's called an OOPI, or an out-of-program training experience, and I encourage them to do so. We also have an amazing resource in terms of the medical students and midwifery students we see. So most of the medical students I receive are actually graduate entry medical students. They've often had a career and other degree or other experience before they come to us. I've had in my clinic to teach a journalist, an anthropologist, a psychologist, And they bring a lot of extra experience and insight. Midwifery students are the same. We've got a lot of mature midwifery students who bring different knowledge and expertise from their lives, their other life skills. Our junior doctors rotate, so every year or even every few months, we get fresh eyes, fresh ideas from doctors coming either from different areas of the hospital, our GP trainee colleagues, who may have come from medicine or psychiatry or paediatrics, who can teach us skills and things we don't know, as well as doctors that have come from other hospitals. So we get doctors rotating through London, but also from outside London, from abroad, and coming into programme. So all these give us new ideas and new insights that we don't have. And a lot of you know I do a lot of work on maternity experience. And women that we care for also bring us fresh views and ideas. They can help us prevent getting stuck in our ways. They can help us see our blind spots. They can make suggestions about how we could organise things better and what is useful for them and what isn't. So if you're a woman or family using maternity services, give us your thoughts, tell us your suggestions. You might want to get involved in your local Maternity Voices partnership. Help us change and move forward. And if you work in maternity services, listen to those suggestions, listen to the experiences your women are telling you they're having in your service, as well as ask others around you that you're working with, what are their thoughts and ideas? What is their experience of life? What skills do they bring that you might not realise they have?
So I do hope you've enjoyed listening to the OBS Pod. If you have, please do leave me a review, subscribe, and join me again to explore more about the day-to-day life of an NHS obstetrician. Please do share what you've enjoyed about listening, and particularly if you've done anything differently as a result. I would like to confirm that although I'm talking about my experiences and my working life, there is no intention to identify any specific woman or family under my care. I take confidentiality very seriously. If you want more information about me, I can be found on Twitter at FW Maternity. And do check out the MatEx hashtag, MatExp, as well as our website, matex.org.uk, for ideas on how to improve women's experience of maternity care. Thank you for listening.